Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 18th through the 20th, 2018, at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by Enfilade. Enfilade is a flagship historical wargaming convention for the Northwest Historical Miniature Gaming Society. Enfilade is held annually over Memorial Day weekend at the Red Lion Inn in Olympia, Washington. Enjoy the largest historical miniature gaming convention west of the Mississippi at Enfilade. Visit www.nhmgscitadel.com for more information. Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the TSR Podcast Network. Just 194 episodes.
We're professionals, ladies and gentlemen.
Let's try it again. One more time with feeling, because I'm good and you have infinite power over there, so it's not like we have issues while staying on track.
Right.
Why couldn't I nail that? For crying out loud.
I don't know. It's not like you haven't done it 500 times.
Seriously. Maybe you should have done the start.
Perhaps.
Here we go. One more time. Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the TSR Podcast Network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 195, Wargaming Recon Gaming Origins. I want to welcome all of you new and longtime listeners alike, because I think you're in for a treat. Since this is episode 195, I thought it'd be kind of fun to be a little nostalgic and look back at some of our beginnings. There's 194 episodes before this, and I don't honestly expect that you will have listened to all of them. Some of you may, some of you may not have, and we do make them available. We kind of do compilations and put them together and things like that. But honestly, I don't expect that you're going to do it. So this kind of gives you a chance, without listening to our entire back catalog, to hear some of the things that may have appeared in earlier episodes and hear how the show came about, but also my gaming journey and also the gaming journey of my buddy and co-host, Mr. Adrian Benson. Adrian, how are you today?
I'm doing great today, John. Thanks.
So Adrian, you have the pleasure of being part of this because you weren't part of it when it all began many, many moons ago.
No, I was not.
And it's your loss, really. But
yeah, I do remember it was one of the first things you mentioned to me when we met.
I've
been running this gaming podcast, and I'm like, at the time, I was like, wasn't really on board with the whole podcast thing, but like what it even was. So my reaction was kind of good for you.
You're like, podcast. That's a word you said. Yes. Yep. Nice, I guess. Maybe. Yep. I don't know.
I was like, are you trying to tell me you are somebody? Because you don't look like somebody.
Oh, I definitely do not look like anybody. You see me on the street, you'd be like, who's that loser? Like, get out of my way, kid.
Yeah.
It was many moons ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. I will always remember that, though. It was literally one of the first things that you said after we met.
So there's this funny kind of like meme going around the net these days about podcasters. And they did a video, I think it was on BuzzFeed, did this YouTube video about it. And it's basically like people saying, like, hi, I'm so-and-so. Did you listen to my podcast? And like all these friends just hanging out saying, well, if you listen to my podcast, you realize that I'm not able to go to your party because, as I said on episode blah, blah, blah of my other podcast, and it's real, because that's what we're like. We know it.
Yeah.
You can make fun of us for it. That's what podcasters are like. We get it. That, and we always promise the quality will be better next time. And next time comes and we fail you. But not here, because we work hard. We are better than your average podcast, which we're going to talk about a little bit later in the show. And that's not just me being full of myself. Those are things that listeners like you have said. So why don't we start and talk about our beginnings? So since we're talking about the show, let me just remind everyone about its actual beginning. So the very first published episode, which Matters, doesn't sound like it should, but Matters that I say published, came out on August 17, 2006, which means we've been doing this for over 11 years. There were some other earlier episodes that I did before that. I think going back to June of that year or even May of that year, but I didn't publish them because they were, I feel weird saying this, because if you listen to the very first episode before, if you listen to the very first episode at the time, you'd be like, this is pretty bad. And it was awful. But those other earlier episodes that didn't get published, they were worse. So you can only imagine how terrible they really were. And I can tell you, like, I've gone back and listened to it. And Adrian, I don't know, have you ever listened to it?
I have not, but I guess I will now.
Oh, don't, because it's a train wreck. It is so bad. It's a wonder that anyone ever listened, because I remember at the time thinking, okay, I did all the steps. I put this out. Now, how do I get people to listen? Like, why would they listen? And I'm doing this thing and I'm all excited. So I'm like, I'm going to do a new episode every day, because as anyone who listens to the show, and as you know, Adrian, when I get excited about it, I go full throttle and then I move on. But podcasting kept me, for whatever reason, kept my attention. And I was like, someone's going to listen. And then I was like, no one's listening. How do I find out are people listening? What's going on? And it's kind of odd, because even though the show, I call the official birthday that August 17th date, but even though that's like the official birthday of the show, it's actually not what I would consider my origin for discussing gaming online. That kind of really goes because the show grew out of this internet message board that I ran. It had a few thousand members, and we talked a lot about, funnily enough, Games Workshop products. 40K, Warhammer Fantasy, Battlefleet Gothic, all of that kind of stuff. And eventually it got so big that I was like, there's a lot of people, a lot of activity, but it was too much work. I was really the main one doing stuff. And I'm like, forget it. So I cut it down. I moved over to a blog, which I thought would be a good idea. And then for whatever reason, I thought a podcast would be easier to do. It's not. It's really not. A blog would be much, much easier. And so almost simultaneously, I launched the podcast, and it's gone through a few different names, and we've had contests and things like that. And eventually I went back, because I was like, someone might want to listen to that first episode. It's terrible, but they might want to do it. And I was honestly embarrassed. I shouldn't be embarrassed, but I was embarrassed about that first episode many moons later. And so I kind of gave it an actual edit, because the first one didn't edit. It's just like me talking, and you'd have a lot of dead air. And then I'm asthmatic. So because I was dumb, I'd get really close to the mic and I'd be asthmatic. So it sounded like I was a rude caller. You would just hear, and it was so bad. So I went back and I properly edited things. And then I re-released it January 31st of, I've done 2017, but that feels more recent than I actually think it is. But the point is, I did redo it so that people could actually give it a listen, and it would be somewhat decent instead of what it was way back in 06, which is a wonder that anything ever came out of it. But I should note that back in 06, those were actually the pretty early days of podcasting. So one of the neat things because of that, and here we go, I get correct date, January 31st, 2013 is when I re-released it. But because I got into it so early, this show, at what it was at the time, was the only and then number one podcast about tabletop wargaming. And it was also the number one podcast about Games Workshop stuff. And we were in the top 10 for iTunes New and Noteworthy, which I never got a screenshot of, which I regret to this day. But we were there, and then here we are. But Adrian, do you want to talk a little bit about your gaming origins? Because yours go back much further than the show's.
Yeah, they do. They're not particularly noteworthy.
They're noteworthy to you.
Yeah, I guess. I got to think about it a little bit. Let's see. So I was always, as people know or should know from listening to the episodes I've been on, that I'm mostly a historical gamer. But history, military history in particular, has always been my thing. I've always been interested in it. I started reading military history books probably when I was in sixth grade in elementary school, and you know, have kept up with it to this day. So, but in doing all of this reading and everything, I was thinking that some way to you could recreate this, like play this out. And of course you did the whole thing with the toy soldiers and everything. Every kid's done that. But and this was obviously way pre-internet days, so you couldn't go to the web and Google like toy soldiers or wargaming or anything like that to get any information. And I just stumbled into it. There was a department store called Boscov's in Pottstown, Pennsylvania, that my parents used to go up to pretty regularly. So we were up there one day, and this was, I just started junior high, so I was, what, seventh grade? It would make me, what, 12, I guess? But we went up to Boscov's one day, and we're just wandering around the store, not in the toy department, but just wandering around. And I saw this, they had like this island sort of in the middle of the store, and it had some books and things on it. But one thing it had was Avalon Hill, what they called at the time, bookcase games. And they were, these are board games, they're, you know, war games, and they're basically book sized, large book size, like encyclopedia size. They called them bookcase games. You could slip the box into your bookshelf and it would, you know, look like a book, I guess was the idea. But anyway, Avalon Hill at the time, I didn't know it because I'd never heard of the company before, but they were one of the giants of tabletop gaming at the time. And they had a number of games there, and one that stood out to me was called Third Reich. And I was like, well, that sounds really cool. So I took the box out and I looked it over, and it said it was not a beginner's game. It was for, you know, people who've been playing for a while, but I was like, you know, whatever, it's a game. I'm relatively smart. I can figure it out. But anyway, it was, and this will be stunning to people who are buying board games nowadays, but this was, you know, a little while ago. It set me back all $12.99. And what Third Reich is, well, it's just what it sounds like. It's a strategic level game that covers the entire European theater of operations in World War II from 1939 to 1945. So I got home, and I pulled all the stuff out, and I started reading the rules. It made absolutely no sense to me whatsoever. Couldn't understand what the rules were trying to tell me, how to play the game or anything. But in spite of that, I punched all the counters out of the counter sheets and set it up and tried to have a go with it. A couple of things about Third Reich. It's definitely not an ideal solitaire game. But it is actually, it was, and it still is a very complex game. Very poor choice for my first game. But I loved it. And I fumbled around. I wasn't playing it right. I knew I wasn't playing it right. I didn't care. It was like, man, I can play this game about this stuff that I'm really interested in. It was really cool. So we fiddled around with that for a while. And it must have been, I don't know, 2-3 months later, we were back up. It must have been around Christmas time. We were back up at the store. So I went back to this little island, hoping it was still there. And it was. And they had another game there called, also from Avalon Hill, called Tactics 2. And it said that this was a beginner's game. So, all right, this is fine. I'll grab this. And that was like, it was cheaper than Third Reich. It was maybe, I don't know, $8, $9. But anyway, I bought that and took it home. And it was very simple. It was very easy to learn to play. It was okay for a solitaire type game, which really wasn't in anybody's minds at the time. Now, nowadays, you can buy games that are specifically designed to be played solitaire, but not then. But I played that until the counters were falling apart. And to be honest, if you see a copy of Tactics 2 laying around, unless you're just interested in it for, you know, collector's item or historical interest, probably best to leave it there because it's a terrible game. It's an awful game. But all the basics of what a good game would have as far as, you know, movement and combat results tables and all this kind of stuff was all in there. So this was actually a perfect introduction to wargaming, and it just kind of blew up from there. And I looked around and I found out, you know, I found out through in the advertisements in the game boxes that Avalon Hill had this magazine called The General. And I was like, oh, that's a cool thing. I'll sign up for that. And I signed up for it, and I started getting the wargaming magazine in the mail. And from there, just kind of little bits and pieces of information sort of came in from everywhere. And I found out there was this whole entire gigantic hobby out there around wargaming. I was like, man, I can't freaking believe this. This is the greatest thing in the world. And ultimately, I found a store called Strategy and Fantasy World that was at the time in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania. So I begged my old man to take me down there, and he finally did. So we went down to Strategy and Fantasy World, and I'm looking around, and this is a store that's completely devoted to, you know, games, war games, role-playing games, obviously Dungeons and Dragons at the time, but also a bunch of stuff from Chaosium, RuneQuest. Did they have HeroQuest at the time? I can't remember. I don't think so. But anyway, a store completely devoted to these games. And this was just unbelievable to me. It was an amazing find. And so that became I probably spent more time at Strategy and Fantasy World than I spent at home after I found out about the place. You couldn't keep me out of there. The store owner, a guy named Ed Wimble, who actually now owns a game company called Clash of Arms Games, which if you're interested in military history games, in particular Napoleonics, you should look up clashofarms.com, I think is the website. But anyway, Ed had a huge back storage area in the back of his store there, and we would just play games back there from the time the store opened until well after it closed, because a couple of guys I started playing with were that they actually worked at the store. And, you know, they weren't like, they were 17, 18 year old kids, but they would close the store at night. And Ed had kind of a devil may care attitude. They had the keys. He didn't care. We would play there all night long from time the store closed until the time the sun started coming up on Sunday morning. It was just the greatest thing in the world. But anyway, that's kind of my origin story. And that's, you know, it kind of steamrolled from there. I mean, it really got kind of, I hate to say out of control, but it did get a little bit out of control. But that was fine. That was fine. Spent a lot of money there. Spent a lot of time there. So it was great. That store doesn't actually exist anymore. It was bought out by a company called Complete Strategist. And they actually moved the store. I forget where it's at exactly. Still in the same general area, but it's not where it was. And I believe there used to be a Complete Strategist up on Mass Ave in Boston by the conservatory. I don't know if it's still there or not. I haven't been up there in a while to check it out. But anyway, that's kind of it for me. I started out with board games. I ultimately moved into miniatures and was a big role player. Dungeons and Dragons somewhat. More the Chaosium games, RuneQuest. There was another guy who worked at the store, a guy named Gary Pilkington. I kind of lost track of him. But he wrote a number of adventures for not RuneQuest, but Cthulhu, Call of Cthulhu. And we got to play test those before Chaosium actually published them. It was fun. It was a lot of fun. Anyway, that's mine.
It's interesting you mentioned the Complete Strategist, because I think they've been kind of a chain. And I don't know if it's the same Complete Strategist or what it is, but I've seen them pop up all over the place at different points and, you know, in listings of online. You see online or in magazines of other game stores around the area, up near us anyway. So I don't know if they're all connected or
people, they are. Yeah, they are.
Maybe they just like the name. I don't know. An interesting thing, though, is that you and I have a partial shared gaming heritage, which I don't think either one of us know. So I kind of view my personal gaming origins to be slightly split. So there's no single line. I'm sure some one thing influenced another. So when I was a kid, I don't, middle school maybe, upper elementary, something like that, a cousin of mine was dating this guy who was into all of this kind of stuff. Loved D&D. He like original D&D. He liked AD&D. Every kind of board game you could ever imagine, and just like all that sort of stuff. And so on Friday nights, he would get together with a bunch of his buddies and they'd play board games until whatever the hell time they wanted to play. So he was always nice enough. He would play board games with me. And he introduced me to two board games that I just thought were amazing. So one of them was Axis and Allies when Milton Bradley reissued that. So this must have been in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
And then another one, and this is where we overlap a little bit. And I don't know if you played it, but it's connected to ones that you've mentioned, but it's Feudal by Avalon Hill.
Yes, I've played that. Yeah.
And I know I have it at my parents' place. I'm sure I have to dig it out, but I remember asking for it one year for Christmas, my parents being like, we have no idea what the heck you're talking about, but we'll talk to your cousin and her boyfriend. And he tracked it down at some like game store on the North Shore somewhere and picked it up so that they could give. And so I got it somewhere. But for those of you who aren't familiar, this is a beautiful game for anyone who likes chess. And that I think it was originally released, mid-late 60s.
Yeah.
And then Avalon Hill, I ended up buying the company, I think. And so it kind of morphed into all this stuff, but the game is unchanged as far as I know. So it takes the more abstract view of chess and codifies it more to fit directly in your face in a medieval setting. So you have a variety of pieces. You get these four plastic game boards with peg holes in them and your models, because that's what they are. You could paint them if you wanted. Of course, I never did because they're colored plastic. Yeah. But the models have little pegs on the bottom and they go right into the slot, and there's different colors on the plastic boards that you then put the boards in whatever coordination or orientation you want. But the colors would represent things like forests or I think rivers maybe and mountains and all that kind of stuff, and would influence how you can move. And then each piece had a more detailed movement. And you also had more pieces. So you had things, everything from like a king and a prince and a duke. Whereas chess, you do not. You'd have archers and you'd have pikemen and all this kind of stuff. And everything moved different. So since I loved chess, I was adapting to this. And it's probably no surprise to anyone that I was in chess club in middle school because that's the kind of kid I was. And
AV club too, I bet, right?
We didn't have AV club in middle school. They had it in high school. And I was like, I'm not going to be in that because I'm going to be different. And we don't talk about high school. But in middle school, I loved chess club. And actually, I was in chess club in part of high school too because I was a popular kid. And I loved that I could take what I knew from chess. And I had to unlearn, you know, a lot of things. Just a lot of stuff from chess didn't apply to feudal. Yeah. But that I could then play feudal. But unfortunately, the only person who I could play feudal with was either play by myself, and it's not really a solo game, but no. I could try to adapt, or play with my cousin's boyfriend. And so I would play other board games of this kind of sort with them, Axis and Allies, and I played this, and Broadsides and Broadswords, I think is the other one. It's a Milton Bradley pirate one.
I remember that one, yeah.
And it's like Road to Rome, I think it was another one, Ancient Roman Empire, and you need to build roads because that allows your troops to move more quickly. But there was like a whole array of them at that time. We played what they re-released as Shogun, and so it's feudal Japan, the same kind of thing. And like I would play that with my friends in the neighborhood, and they never really understood because they were like, what is this? They would like to play computer games. Yeah. That would be similar, but the board game, they'd be like, I don't know. And so, but we would do our best to play. We would mess it up more often than not. So I was very much a board gamer. And like, as a young kid, you know, I loved all those old classic board games like Monopoly and Risk and Stratego. That was a big one. I still have my Stratego set from when I was a kid. And like, that was the one, it was big because my mother would play and my mom would be like, I'll play a game. But like, she didn't love playing games, but I'm an only child. So she'd be like, okay, I'll play a game. And like that was one I would routinely get to play with her because she loved it. And I'd be like, this is kind of cool because it's military. And I loved all those military history and the movies and everything. But then like the other kind of resurgence was when I was in high school, because I had a friend who one day he was in the library because, again, no surprise, on my free study periods, I would volunteer to work in the school library. I think this is giving people a clear picture of what kind of kid I was in school. And we had computers, like when you could have computers, you could go on the internet, but back in the days before, like you had a search engine. And yeah. So you just had to know what the website was you were going to. So like some kids would type in websites that they thought were like, say, for where the president lives. And it turns out that wasn't what it was. and they didn't have filters back then because it was new, right?
Yeah.
So, I remember walking by and be like, just kind of looking, because we'd have to look to make sure like kids weren't looking at inappropriate things or whatever. And seeing this friend of mine looking at these really amazing painted fantasy figures. And they were dragons and they were knights and they had cool looking swords and lances. And I was like, what is that? And so he talked to me a little bit about it. I was like, so how do you get it? And how do you play? And what does it cost? And he was talking about Warhammer Fantasy. And I was just like, this is so amazing. And where do you go to get these things? And how does that go? And so this was like probably middle of my high school years. And so like we kind of bonded over that, and he opened me up to miniature wargaming. And I became very much a Games Workshop kind of kid. So that in those days it was doing fantasy, and they were kind of transitioning into different editions. And 40K was pretty neat because I liked the whole like Space Marine sort of thing. So when I graduated high school, I took a lot of my graduation money and went to a nearby comic store. Because at the time they sold Games Workshop stuff, and I bought just a ton of, or what felt like a ton anyway, of 40K stuff, things that you can't get anymore because it was old edition. It was like the tail end, and so they were heavily discounted. But like Space Marine Command Squads and all that kind of stuff, and Battlefleet Gothic, and all these things that are kind of coming back. And I find it humorous that I got my miniature gaming start with GW products, and so heavily so, whereas nowadays I don't really enjoy this stuff anymore. But at the time, it was amazing. It was cool. And I was like, I need to learn how to paint and try to figure all that out because it's so different, right, from playing board games.
Oh, yeah.
The board game, you have everything, right, Adrian? You nowadays, you pay your $80 for the board game. You open up and you punch your things and you play after you read 40 pages of rules. And the miniature game, whatever it is, I don't care. if it's historicals or fantasy or pulp or whatever, you got to be like, okay, so I buy the rules. Yeah. And then I got to figure out what scale, and I got to figure out who I'm going to buy the models from. Like, what manufacturer do I like? Do I like this? Do I like that? Will they go? You got to buy all your equipment and your model hobby knives and your different paintbrushes and your paints and all the accoutrement. And so it has like a really high level, a high cost level anyway, to get into miniature wargaming. And so yeah. I think it can exclude a lot of people, especially people of different lower economic levels. Like, you need to have a lot of disposable income, or your parents do, in order for you to get into that. Whereas board games, not so much.
Yeah. And, I mean, there's ways around that, but yeah. And it's not just the money that's a barrier to entry, but it's like you said, you got to assemble and paint all of that stuff before you can actually play.
And it's terrible because, like, a lot of kids, like, they might think they have the time, but they don't, or they may not have the attention. And growing up, like, we didn't have money. Oh, we were poor. And so, like, getting a board game was a big thing. Would never have been able to afford miniature gaming. And so, like, my timing for it was kind of good because, like, going off to college and then, like, working and all that was starting to get money. But also, I had time, so I could do these things. And, like, I might not have class until, like, later in the day. I'd have two classes, so I could spend the whole morning, like, getting stuff together and painting and playing and doing all that. And so it was really nice to do that. But I was unfortunately stuck in that whole GW box. And I was like, okay, I want to try historical stuff. But like, what do you do? Because in my mind, the only logical thing was that there should be a whole enclosed system. Kind of like anyone who's familiar with computers, with like Mac, right? Adrian, like, you buy a Mac and everything just works because they control all aspects of it.
Yeah.
You have to get everything that's Apple. And Windows, of course, completely different. But like, I was in a very Apple world. And historical gaming is kind of like a PC world. Where it's like the Wild West. There's everything out there and you got to figure it out for yourself.
Yeah.
And so for me, I was really overwhelmed. Were you overwhelmed when you kind of transitioned to minis?
Yeah, a little bit. It's a little bit better now than it was, say, in the late 80s, early 90s. I mean, there are. That's the one thing that GW has going for it that makes it not a bad place for people to jump in, is that it is one-stop shopping. I mean, they've got their issues, no doubt about it, but they supply everything you need to play their games. If you go out and if you're a World War II guy, if that's what your interest is, and you pick up, I don't know, pick a set of World War II rules, you pick up I Ain't Been Shot, Mom, from Two Fat Lardies. Great set of rules. Now you've got this rule book. Now what do you do?
Exactly.
You know, it's like, and they tell you, you know, you got to buy these certain amount of figures and you got to have your units organized this way. But still, if that was 13-year-old me trying to get into World War II miniatures, it would be a little bit overwhelming. It's like, you know, I got this set of rules and it sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun to play. Where do I get all this stuff? Now, it's easier now than it used to be because it's like they're talking about, you know, you buy 15-millimeter figures and you need to put them on, you know, a 40x20-millimeter base. And it's like you go to Google and type in 40x20-millimeter wargaming base and bang, up pops Litco and a dozen other suppliers. So it is a little bit easier for people today, but that doesn't mean it's easy. So
no, of course not.
It can be a little hard to know where to go. Now, the other thing, though, is there are one-stop shops for wargaming now. You have Flames of War. You can get everything you need from Battlefront.
Warlord Games.
Warlord Games.
I mean, they don't do everything themselves, but they have strong connections and they sell.
They don't.
Like Army Painter stuff, for example, so you can get
exactly
your train and all that other crap from it.
Yeah, it's like, all the stuff may not be manufactured by Warlord, but if you want to play Black Powder, you go to the Warlord Games website, you click on the Black Powder link, and everything you need to do Black Powder is there. Now, you know, some of it's Warlord, some of it is maybe Renedra or Foreground, but you can get it all right there on their website. You don't have to poke around all over the internet to get it. Mm-hmm. So
you're right. I think it makes a big difference because, like you said, for me, if I was like a kid or a teenager just getting into historicals, I would have been like, forget it. I'm going to give up because, like, I don't even know where to begin. And I think part of it is that because they come from different origins. So you look at GW, and GW comes from the origin of being a vendor of D&D. And D&D, not a board game, but the board game treatment where everything you needed was in the box or in your imagination.
Yeah.
So like you get the box, you open up Red Box, and bam! You got your character sheets, you got your rules as they were, maybe dice, I don't remember, and all that kind of stuff. And then you sit down and you think and you use the theater of your mind and you play and you're golden. And GW loved D&D and sold a lot of it. And they were like, decided they were doing a, you know, a fantasy miniatures game. And so transitioned to that. So I think they had that mindset of like, they wanted to keep it accessible and everything there because they had that retail background and had the other. Whereas I think a lot of historical games come from the other, where they come from a place from the other aspect of D&D, because D&D actually comes out of historical wargaming rules, chainmail. Yeah. And I think people who like historical gaming and who created rules did so so that they could be like, I want something for my friends and I to play with. We have stuff already, or we're going to use pieces of cardboard or paper. And they didn't really get connected into the whole fact that if people like it enough, other people are going to want to play, and they're not going to have this stuff on hand. They're going to need to figure it out. And so I think people are very much old school gaming in that, for historicals anyway, they're stuck in that system without realizing that they need to broaden it and make it more accessible. And like you said, I think they're fixing it a little bit more now. You mentioned Flames of War, and a bolt action would be a good World War II one also for people. So you got Warlord, but again, Warlord, a lot of the Warlord guys come from Games Workshop.
Yes.
So they might be designers from the golden age of it, and people who worked in different aspects of the company. One of the head honchos at Warlord is Paul Sawyer, who was an editor for White Dwarf, which I loved. Like you with your Wargaming magazine. I love getting White Dwarf in the mail, like being able to save up for a year subscription to it, because it was $50. I was like, $50 is a lot of money, right? Yeah. And being able to get that and getting an issue every month, I loved it, and devouring all the stuff. So they, again, they're from that GW background, whereas I think a lot of the other companies, they might be one-man shops, or they just, they don't have all the experience and the, you know, atmosphere to be like, we need to plug this into everything. So we need to make it easy for people, instead of being like, people are just going to have to figure it out on their own, or oh well, because that's not going to fly anymore. People need it laid out for them. And so I think that's one area where historicals have kind of fallen behind. And for me, I don't think I would ever have continued into historicals. And I've said this before on the show, but it's been a long time since I've said it. But if it weren't for Henry Hyde, and
I thought you were going to say me.
No, but you know what, though? To give you some credit, I mean, when we were gaming, we didn't really do historicals.
No, not at first.
We started, it was other things, and the closest we kind of came, we started a little bit with Flames of War.
Yeah.
But again, that's more GW historicals than anything. It's like historicals, if historicals were a movie, I guess. Not that that's bad, because that's bolt action, but like it's different. It's a different system. But going into really making the jump from historicals, I thought they were all like how GW did, because I thought, this makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you do it like this to make it easy, where like you put out the rules and you're going to make the models and everything too,
right?
Without thinking about it's super expensive to do any of that. And so some people can just make rules and piggyback off some other company's models. But Henry, God bless his soul, which is ironic because it is. I sent him this long email because at the time, a former co-host of the show had said to me, oh, we should get Henry Hyde on. And I was like, Henry who? Because I had no idea who he was. And didn't realize he was a force in the UK and editor of Battle Games magazine, and that people knew him, and he was well connected, still is well connected to GW people. And I remember sending an email to Henry saying, there's this thing called Black Powder, but I don't quite understand. And it was basically me freaking out in this really, really, really long email, and Henry being the nicest person ever and taking the time to reply and talk me off the ledge and be like, well, this is how it works. And you got to look and research and find this and look, use these search terms and think about this. And then I was like, oh my goodness, it's not the same. This is what I got to do. And like, because he helped, I moved on. And here we are here talking about this and other gaming. And did you have a transition or like a mentor for you when you tried to make that leap into the more complicated aspects of tabletop gaming?
No, I was pretty lucky. Like, if I had a mentor at all, I would say that, yeah, it was Ed Wimble, the guy from Strategy and Fantasy World and Clash of Arms Games. But not just him, because I was fortunate that I had that whole store to hang out in. And there were any number of people there who had been in the hobby for, you know, years. And they all ran games. They all, you know, if you were struggling with, I don't know, whatever rules or whatever, they would help you out. It was like a real community. So yeah, I guess I would say the population of that store was my, my mentor, I guess. But no, there wasn't any particular, I wouldn't say there was any particular moment where I just figured it all out. I kind of, I kind of knew all about it and was just like finally deciding to make the leap from, I shouldn't even say make the leap from board games to miniatures, but to start to get into miniatures. So
no, I think you highlight something that is important for both of us, and I would presume for other gamers as well, and that is the importance of a place for you to learn from one another and for you to game. And I think that place is transitioning now to some other third place. But for you and I, it was a game store. I mean, you mentioned his game store, and then we, of course, met through Battlegrounds, yep, which is a local game store. And funny, because Battlegrounds doesn't do historicals, and that's really what we're about now.
Yeah.
But like we said, we started not doing the historicals and just kind of connecting through that and playing things from there and using the game store as a place. And it's, like I said, it's transitioned, I think, away, and I think it's continuing, because I think a lot of people, that third space for them to learn about all this stuff and share knowledge is the internet. And that's kind of where the podcast comes in. Because yeah, when we got together and connected as friends, as you said, I was like, hey, I got a podcast. And you're like, what the heck is that? What are you doing?
Yeah, of course. Nowadays, I would say, yeah, who doesn't? But yeah.
Of course, like everybody in their mother has one, and their grandma does one. And yeah, people tune in to shows like ours, or to YouTube videos and internet message boards and that kind of stuff to learn about this. So that's why, like, I think it's very important for what we do. So not only when people ask me about the show and like, what is the show? I usually, if they have any familiarity with gaming, I'm like, oh, you know, we talk about tabletop gaming, but I always spin it, especially when like I sign up for places for us to be in other directories and that kind of stuff, as both entertainment and education, because I really think that we not only have a good time, and I think people have a good time listening to us, and they get to see all the cool things that we do and hear about all the fun stuff, but I think they learn something too. So like, we do how-tos, we've done tutorials on things. And like, when I was doing the blogs specifically as a blog, and for a while I was doing them together, I was doing like painting tutorials, which is kind of funny because I don't paint.
It's hilarious.
I can't say that anymore, because thank you, Modelbox.
Yeah, true enough.
Without Modelbox, it sounds like that, but it's true. I wouldn't be. But like, I did a whole series on Quickshade, Army Painter Quickshade. And like, this is how it looks, and this is what I did. And so you could really teach others, and they can learn like what they like and what they don't like about what we do. And so I think it's multifaceted, and not to overinflate the importance of any podcast, nor Wargaming Recon. But I think for a lot of people, they don't have a friendly local game store. They don't have a local game group. We are their friendly local game store. We are their gaming group. They get to experience all of that through us, or shows like us. Yeah. And I think it's wonderful that we can do that for them, because we are their community and they are ours. And I think that's a real strength of any podcast, but especially a show like ours, so that, you know, you and I, we each had our own wargaming journeys, which are continuing, of course, and continue to grow. But for me, at least, and I think you would say for you as well, especially lately, mine is closely tied to the show. Do you think like your gaming is pretty much like this with the show, you know, it's together?
What answer is going to get me paid as co-host?
The answer that gets us a lot more people on our Patreon campaign, giving money, whatever one that is.
My gaming present and future is inextricably tied up with Wargaming Recon.
So think about it this way. And I know it's hard, but in a non-sarcastic way, most of your tabletop gaming that you don't do by yourself is done with whom?
John Caputo.
All right, then.
Well, it's true. No.
It is not true. You do a lot with him.
Yeah.
But most.
Are you jealous? Is that what it is? Are you jealous of John? Is John jealous of John? Is that what's going on here?
What can I say?
A little bromance triangle? That's weird.
Just a smidge.
Yeah. No, you say it that way. It probably is with you.
I'm not saying by a ton, but like,
yeah,
the game days, the cons, getting together during the week.
Definitely cons.
Any game. I mean, every so often you play a miniatures game with Caputo or whoever. Sometimes I'm able to, but I think most of your gaming, if you don't count D&D with your kid, I think most of your gaming, D&D encounters every Wednesday.
I forgot about that, yeah.
I think otherwise, most of your gaming is with me. And most of the stuff we game are things for the show either because we want to talk about it, we need content for the show or for social media for the show, or it's stuff that we've been given for review that we then have to play.
So what you're telling me now is that most of my gaming is job related.
Hobby related.
So I quit.
It's been nice knowing you. I'll give you a severance check in 2 weeks.
Yeah, that'll be a big one.
Yeah, well, you know. For me, I think it's the same. My gaming, I love to game, but I've refocused so that whenever I'm gaming, I think, is this going to be appropriate for the show? Is this going to give some good content for our audience, for them to see something new, for them to get a different experience with something, or to replay an old favorite?
I mean,
recently I did that whole Solo 1775 and took all these pictures and did a whole write-up and put it up on our fan club Facebook page. And as I was playing it, I was like, I'm just going to play the game because it's fun and I like it. And then I thought, oh, wait, no, I need to slow down and take pictures because the listeners would enjoy it. So I have to put it up on the thing. Or like when last time we all played Bolt Action, right? Caputo, you and me, what were we doing? You guys are chatting and I'm taking video to make a video to give to the listeners.
Yeah.
And I think it's, of course, mostly me, but I think it's true for you as well. So that our gaming is driven by the needs of the show and our audience.
Somewhat. I certainly don't think about Wargaming Recon every time I set a game up. But yeah, no, I didn't really think about it, but I suppose you're right. Yeah.
And I'm sure a lot of it is because I'm the one kind of be like, how about we funnel this way? And this way is the way that I'm thinking would be good for the show. And you're like, hey, okay, because I want to play a game. And John says we got to go this way, so we're going to play the game. And it's something of interest to you.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's fortunate that our interests do tend to line up, because I wouldn't, if it was something I didn't enjoy, I wouldn't do it just for the show.
No. That's when it's a job.
Yeah. But if I didn't enjoy it, I wouldn't be. That's the thing. Like, if we're playing something or reviewing something that was bad or just wasn't fun, it's just, I wouldn't be able to present it in any kind of a positive or meaningful light, probably. So it would be pointless.
Well, and I think listeners would pick up on that, which is why there's kind of this unwritten rule that I have that we're not just going to, when we review something, which is actually a great segue, when we review or talk about something, we're not just going to say nice things about it if it doesn't deserve to have nice things said about it. But if something has no redeeming qualities or just so terrible, we would rather not spend the time talking about it, because by giving attention and exposure to something that's so bad, we're doing a good thing for it when maybe it doesn't deserve it in our opinion. So if we, at least for me anyway, if we really don't like anything, it never comes on the show. It never makes an appearance. We don't talk about it. It doesn't exist. But if there's something that, you know, is pretty decent, but maybe has things wrong with it or needs some improvement, that's fair game, because that's constructive. So that helps the game designer or the companies or the publishers, the vendors, other players. Yeah. I think it's helpful instead of just bashing. And so being able to do that is helpful. Way, way back when I started the show, I thought, oh, wouldn't it be great to be able to review stuff? Because that's what people do who are in the media. They review things and they run contests. And so we did contests for a while. And then I was like, well, that cost me a lot of money, so we're not doing contests. And then I was like, so how are we going to do this whole review thing? Because gaming is expensive and I don't have money. And so we didn't really review things, or we reviewed things that I had already. And I was like, oh, it'd be great if people and companies sent us stuff to review. And of course, I never approached anyone, but if I did, they'd be like, who the heck are you? What is this thing? And why do you want us to do it? Like, who do you think you are? Is really what it would be. And nowadays, companies approach us.
Yeah.
Or if we approach them, they don't just say, hey, go take a long walk off our short pair. They're like, they actually consider it and they see this value. So, for example, recently got a nice, nice package of things from Crescent Root, which is all thanks to you, Adrian, for mentioning them.
Yeah, I love Crescent Root.
New product that they're putting out, and the stuff looks really good. And I did an unboxing video, which you make fun of me for. But people like them. And so, like, this is something. It's a brand new set. I think the whole set, which isn't everything that we got, but I think the whole set is like $90. And, I mean, they sent it for a review, so it didn't cost us anything. Sometimes people send stuff for a review, and we get a discount, so we still pay something for it. But if we had to pay $90 for this, I tell you, I would not be twirling it around in our video or saying, hey, we got something for a review from Crescent Root. because that $90 would be going to something else for the show or some other gaming thing that we need.
Yeah, or food or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, paying my bills and my kid or, yeah. You know, not dying. Like any of that kind of stuff. Important things, medication, whatever. Because asthmatic, as I mentioned, I need meds so I don't die. Very important. And so like buying something else, I'd be like, yeah, that's pretty neat, but I can't afford to do it. So not going to do it. And like, it's cool that companies trust us. And I think that's a key word with the show and with us, with each of our gaming journeys, there's that trust. So like you've had that trust with Ed when he was a mentor for you, and you had trust that didn't play out necessarily with some of those gaming companies with the bookshelf games that, you know, it's easy, it's accessible, and no, it wasn't. So they mislaid trust for you. Trust between us as gamers, one another, anyone has that. You're at a table, right? And you have trust that the person you're playing the game against is not going to be a dick, right? Sometimes that doesn't work out, so the trust is broken.
Yeah.
Sometimes it does, which is great. Hopefully more times it works out than it doesn't. And then I think our audience has trust in us that we're going to do a good job, give them value. And then we have trust in them, too, that they're going to continue to listen and appreciate what we do. So trust is a key thing with all of our origins. It's interesting. You get something like a show like this, and it's about gaming. And you think, oh, that's nice. It's about gaming, but it's really not. It's about so much more. And maybe I'm just making a mountain out of a molehill. I don't know. But I think it ends up being a lot deeper than people think it is.
Okay.
That's a year off base, man. But again, the Crescent Root stuff, it's pretty good. We got a video. And Adrian, I can't wait for you to see the stuff in person because it is so nice.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I love the Crescent Root buildings. I've got, well, let's just say I have a fair amount of money invested in Crescent Root products. But
well, you get that church, right? That church. I'm not going to put you on the spot for how much you spent on it, but I will be able to look it up and tell listeners that it wasn't cheap.
It was right at...
I mean, your wife's not listening, so it doesn't matter.
I don't care anyway. it was around $200, a little less, a little more with shipping and everything. I don't remember exactly. Not cheap. And
$225.
Okay. Worth every penny.
Because it's MDF. Yep. It is pre-painted, pre-assembled with yep. removable roofs and levels and things. You still need to buy. Because I love to spend other people's money.
Yeah, you do. There's a little cloister, a chapel that goes with it, and a whole and base.
The base is gorgeous.
Yeah, it is. And I do need, well, I say need, I want to buy that. I just, I haven't had the spare. I've had the spare bucks. Cash lately. Yeah. Yeah. But
it's a lot of money, but it's worth it.
It is worth it. It's an amazing piece. Now I wish I had a photo we could throw up of it. But anyway,
I'll have a link in the show notes or that people watching the video down below in the description. As you see in all the videos, people are like, look down here. You'll have that so people can see it. You also get another piece of theirs. This is something I don't like about Crescent Root. They don't give names to their buildings. They give model numbers. So you have something they refer to, I believe, as 28mm Series 3 Model 28A3. And who the heck knows what that actually means? I'm sure it has something to do with like the colors that they come in or whatever.
Well, I know what it means. It's the three-story farmhouse with the garden walls.
That's exactly what it is. And like that's more affordable. That's $42 for the build-in. And
yeah, and
you actually got it with the damage in the ruin, so you can swap that out. So that's like 52, and then the walls are like an extra 10.
Yeah,
and they're worth it.
They are worth it, and I'll tell you why they're worth it. Not to knock one on Foreground, which I'm not doing because they have amazing products, but that same building from Foreground would cost you about the same price, say about $50. But when you get it from Foreground, it ain't painted and it ain't assembled.
Exactly.
So yeah, Crescent Root. Two thumbs up. I love Crescent Root. The only thing and hopefully he'll see this, the only thing I wish they would do is have a wider range of products.
Well, one, I can assure you that he will. His name's Mark, because I've been in contact with them, and actually listeners will appreciate. We are going to be reviewing the new stuff that they sent us. This is brand new. I think we're the very first to get it. Customers, we have got it. You know, people who actually paid for it. But media people, because we're counted as media, we're industry. Who knew we were in the industry, but we count as industry people. I feel weird saying that, but it's true. I feel like I'm just following myself.
Do you know who I am? Can we say that?
Exactly. You know, so in my other life, before I did the show, I used to be a politician and I was an elected official and everything. And saying that would have landed me in jail because that counts as like soliciting a bribe and asking for preferential treatment. And you can get in a lot of trouble for that, for violating ethics. So I specifically try not to say that because it just, one, it feels wrong and for the show, but it is so funny whenever you say it, like it always makes you laugh. And sometimes I'll be talking with people about gaming stuff and there'll be a situation where it'd be perfect for like a, do you know who I am? And in my head, I hear your voice saying, do you know who I am? And I just start laughing. People look at me like I'm weird. I'm like, but really, if you knew what I was thinking, it'd be funny. But we're going to do a full review of this Crescent Root stuff, the new one. And this is cool because it's what he calls as hybrid. His original series, part of why it's more expensive is it's all laser cut MDF. This, and if you watch, if you're listening to the podcast, you're SOL, you're out of luck. Watch the video. But if you watch the video, we'll have a picture on social media and stuff. But this new stuff, it's hybrid because it's made out of laser cut MDF and 3D printed plastic PETG. And I tell you, this does not look 3D printed to me. No. It is gorgeous, better than any 3D printed thing I've ever seen. And the thing I'm holding up, it's kind of like a small farmhouse looking thing. It's $38. And there's a larger shed kind of farmhouse looking thing, which is also $38. There's a small, tiny shed outhouse looking thing, which is $22. And then this particular set, it has these small stucco kind of walls. And depending on what you want, I think they're like $8 and change per segment, I think. And these are 3D printed again. They hand painted, which is nice. All the hand painting's really good. You can get corner walls, walls with posts. This is just a straight wall. You can get a straight wall with a post on the end. And then also with the set are these little stone walls, yeah, which are cheaper. And they're, I think, just under his regular 28mm accessories. They're a little, his site's a little hard to navigate to kind of figure out what you want. Because like you go to it and you're like, oh, I want terrain. I want stuff. And first, you got to figure out what scale. So like, click on whatever, and then you're gonna be like, well, what series is it? And you're like, I don't know what series it is. And then you click and stuff. But like the stone walls, they're good, so you could do like a pasture and outline all of it. And they vary on pricing, but like these small ones are like $8. It goes from like 16 to 8. And then they have like these really cool barrels, which are neat for things, and they get some good weight to them, printed plastic, all that kind of stuff. So it's pretty neat. And the reason why I know that he will see this was one, because I'm going to send it to him and send a link to the episode. But I already linked him to the unboxing I did of all of these. And okay, he appreciated it. He liked that we were fast about it, but he's like, you know, take as long as you need to do a review, because it takes a while. And he's right, it does, which is part of the reason why I like to do the unboxings very quickly, because I wish we could be quicker. I'm not blaming anyone except for me, but I wish we could be quicker with our reviews. But he's like, we get a whole other lineup. They get all this other stuff coming out. Oh. And he wants to know if we're interested in doing it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, sure, we'll review. We'll look at it. And like, I never promise that we're going to do a good review. I promise we'll look at it and we'll give a review.
Yeah.
And that's what we'll do. But yeah, stuff, it's gorgeous.
Well, depending on your availability, that stuff there, we can have that on the table this weekend or next.
Bolt action, right?
Yeah.
And I tell you, looking at it, I was trying to figure out what theater, and I almost think it's, he told me it's Western European small farmhouse.
That's what I would say, yeah. Anywhere in Western
Europe. To me, it almost feels a little Italian. You look at the roof, things like that. Makes me think Roman.
Yeah, could be.
I mean, that is Western Europe, don't get me wrong, but I think more Mediterranean with this. Syrian, maybe.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. But that would also be the, you know, the Mediterranean coast of France just as easily.
Yeah, and I think you could use it for North America, too.
It would fit in anywhere. I don't know about North America, to be honest.
You could depend on what area. Yeah. Southwestern U.S.
Yeah.
Southern U.S.
But yeah, anyway, we'll definitely get those on the table sooner than later.
And that leads me and all of us, you and I, talking about Wargaming moving forward. I mean, we talked about our origins, right? The show's origin, your origin, my origin, kind of where things are now for us. Where do you see your gaming going as we progress forward?
I don't know. Apparently, I have to check in with you and see what direction the show's going. And
thanks.
That's what I do.
Thanks. Thanks a lot.
I got a lot of stuff in mind, a lot of different. And for me, it's a little different. They're just mostly it's different theaters that I want to game in. All right. I mean, you know, the current thing is pirates. We've got I'm going out of my mind trying to get all the pirates painted that we need to run Blood and Plunder. So that's going to be the next big thing. Other stuff I've got on deck, we have Rommel that we want to try, but that's just World War II, and we have Battle Group that I want to play, but again, that's just World War II. I would say that aside from the pirates, the next big thing I want to do is going to be one of three things. I really want to get a 15mm American Civil War off the ground. I've got a bunch of Union troops painted, but I don't have anyone for them to fight, so I need to work on that.
Is that Old Glory?
It's a mixture of Old Glory and another company who I'm embarrassed to say I can't recall the name of off the top of my head.
And for rules, are you thinking Okay. Yeah, are you thinking like the Glory Hallelujah supplement to Black Powder? Or are you thinking something else for Civil War?
Well, that's the great thing. We can use any of the rules I've got. We can definitely do it in Black Powder, but I want to try Across a Deadly Field, and I also have Picket from Two Fat Lardies. So
the cool thing about Across a Deadly Field,
yes,
is
cigar box battle mats. They've got themed mats. Yes,
and you have one, don't you? Didn't you order one of the Across the Deadly Field mats?
No, I did not. I was going to, but I didn't. I ordered the mat for the mat with the grid lines for Rama instead.
Oh, okay. See, that's why I was all excited. It was like, and you bought the mat, so we could have.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, afraid not. May pick one up eventually, but no, I got the grid line mat for Rommel. So, but yeah, so the 15mm Civil War. I also have, and I don't know how popular this will be, but it's an area of history, wargaming, conflict, whatever, that's always interested me. But Colonial British, specifically in South Africa. So I've got a set of rules, Death in the Dark Continent, that I got from North Star. And I want to try that out. So mostly because I want to paint up, you know, 1780s, 1790s. I don't know what I'm saying.
So are you talking like you want to paint up a bunch of Zulu as well? Or like, what do you?
Well, see, now that's the downside. I want to paint I definitely want to do the British Redcoats, even though they were out of the Redcoats pretty quickly once they got to South Africa. But the holdup is actually painting the native troops, because it means painting a lot of flesh. And I find it very difficult to paint decent looking flesh tones. So that's what's going to hold that up.
Well, yeah, I mean, you don't want to paint a bunch of Africans and make it look like you're racist, and you want it to look good. And it's a color palette. I think it's hard to get right.
Yeah, looking racist would be the last thing that I would worry about, as I'm sure you're aware. But to make it look right. Yeah, I don't know. And it doesn't matter the color. It's just painting flesh is hard. I mean, it's like you paint up your World War II figures and you do the base coat and maybe a highlight and then hit it with a wash and you're done. But to get it to look good, it's not that simple. So anyway.
Well, Mike Payne had that trouble because for Huzzah, they were doing Afghanistan again with the British. And he's like, how am I going to paint the Afghanis so it doesn't look like there's something they're not? And I forget how he came up with it, but whatever his method was. And I think Gabriel Landowski had a good method too. I think you could adapt it pretty easily to adjust it with the right colors to then do your Zulu or whatever other people you need from Africa.
Yeah, maybe I'll talk to him then, because it definitely needs to be simple is the thing for me, because as you know, I hate painting. But yeah, if they've got a method that's relatively easy to apply, yeah, that would be great. But anyway, I want to do that. So, and the other thing I have in mind, and I haven't, is going to be Napoleonics. I've got a 50 or a 28mm Prussian Napoleonic force, but I don't have anyone for them to fight. But I'm also thinking, do I want to do 28s, or do I want to start a whole 15mm? And I don't know for sure.
I think you want 15.
Yeah. So I got to think about that one a little bit more. But I've got the Colonial British and the Zulus, and I've got the 15mm American Civil War on deck. So plenty of projects in my future. What about you?
So for me, obviously, a lot of it involves playing games with you. And I want to say all three that you mentioned excite me. But honestly, other than American Civil War, which I think is a no-brainer, the one that excites me the most, and you might be surprised, it's the Napoleonics.
Yeah, that does surprise me, actually.
And I think for that, and I know your interest would be to go really in depth and involved with it, but I think for me, something a little lighter, like a snappy nappy kind of rule style, and also lowering the skill, because you're talking, depending on what battle and what area you want to do, and you want to get the most bang for your buck, you're probably talking a lot of figs, right? And if you got to paint a lot of figs, because although I can't say I don't paint anymore, the chances of me painting Napoleonics are the non-existent. So unless you hired someone to paint these things, you're going to be painting a lot of figs.
Yeah.
With the fancy uniforms and the nice colors and getting things right. And you don't want rivet counters coming up to you and saying, you got the facings wrong on that unit, or that's early 1808 and not mid-early 1808, which I know won't matter to you, but some, like, why hear them? Like, we just don't need to hear that. So if you do 15 mil, it's less likely to get that. It's easier to get all the stuff. It's cheaper, right? Because you get all these projects.
Yeah, it's definitely cheaper.
It takes up less space in your house, which I know is an issue. It's an issue for a lot of us. And you can fit that, and then it's easy to transport because you're not going to be playing at home, right?
No.
You're playing at a convention, at a game store, at Wargaming Recon Central. And so you're going to have to carry that stuff. When we play Bolt Action, which is how I'm segueing into some of my gaming, there's a lot of stuff we got to bring. With miniatures gaming, there's always a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And you got two gigantic or three gigantic plastic like storage tote bin things.
Yeah.
That's a pain in the butt because you get all that, plus you get your figure case and all this stuff, and then I have all my things that I bring, and like now that I have an army, so like my army I gotta bring, plus we got the trees and we got your crescent route and now my crescent route, and we get the mats and all this and the hill forms, and it's like eight trips to go in and out of the game store or wherever we're going to play just for all this stuff, and then you gotta fit it in your car.
Yeah.
For 15 mil, I mean, I know it's another scale and of course another time period, so that would mean a whole, for me, it's not so much the miniatures, because in my head anyway, even if I'm not going to paint the stuff, I had these grand visions of being able to afford to hire a miniatures painter, which is probably not true. But I had these visions that I will someday be able to do such a thing. And so for me, the more difficult aspect of it is the terrain, getting the terrain that's nice, that's the right scale and all that kind of stuff.
And that's the appeal of doing the Napoleonics in 28, is that we could use all the terrain that we already have.
That's true.
I don't have any Civil War terrain, so I'm free to do what I want there, and that's why I chose 15 millimeter for that. But
and we can get 15 mil pretty easily because there's terrain just about anywhere for 15 mil.
Oh yeah,
and it's pretty affordable. And Crescent Route, not necessarily for the time periods we're talking about, but they do 15 mil terrain.
Yeah,
so you could get some nice stuff. And there's other companies, you know, that do 15 mil. So I think that would work well for me. I envision most of my gaming being gaming with you for the show, primarily Bolt Action. I love the Warlord stuff. I love their whole taking black powder and building on it. I really want us to do some Hail Caesar, although I love Aurelion because it's just, even if we don't use models and just use that unit tiles, I think having something that's more portable is going to play well better.
Yeah.
Of course, anything for the show, whatever that ends up being, there'll be some new game, some new whatever that we'll have to spend time with, or I will, and therefore I'll rope whoever I can in, because that's what I do. I'm like, hey, you should be doing this instead, because this is way cooler. I'm like Tom Sawyer saying, who wants to paint a fence? Who wants to paint the fence? Come here. It's right of what I do. So like that kind of stuff I think will be really interesting. This is probably anathema to a lot of people, but a lot of the gaming I love is computer gaming and video games. So like I recently got Cities Skyline, which is a city building simulation. Yeah, it was heavily discounted, so I couldn't say no. And I got, and like, I love that kind of stuff. SimCity and Prison Architect and just any of that sort of stuff. So I have like this whole wish list on Steam of that kind of stuff that I want to do. I want to get Total War Warhammer 2. And like, it is the best Total War game out there. Even though it's not historical, it is better than any of the historical ones. It's something which is weird because although I love history and I once was very familiar with certain aspects of it, because I don't have time to read anymore, I'm not as familiar as I used to be. Like those memories and that knowledge have disappeared and gone away and they faded. But I'm pretty familiar with the Warhammer fantasy world. And so like I'll be like, oh yes, this unit, that makes sense because this is what they did and where they're from. And so like that kind of stuff plays in for me. And then I also think actually, oddly enough, that spending more time, for me, more gaming time, is going to be doing things that are not gaming, because I think part of my gaming future involves stuff for the show, which I have to kind of tie together. And I feel really lucky that I have you here as part of the team, Adrian, and that we also have on the team, we got Mike, we got Alex's on-air personalities, and then behind the scenes, we have Jamie and we have Joshua. And I actually see a lot of my time being spent kind of administrating and managing a lot of that kind of stuff, making sure things work and flow better, and so that we can maintain this high quality as we expand. And I see us expanding. I mean, we've talked, we're waiting for it to actually happen because things are slow when you involve the federal government, but the Roku channel and creating video content for all of that. So like really lining a lot of that up and doing more with that and making sure that we stay on task and that we're focused with a lot of this, but in a way where, I mean, you mentioned job, right? It can't be a job. And when people look at podcasts, I think podcasts get a bad name and a bad rap because people think of them in one of two ways. So you either think of the guy in the basement where I am now, and you think of them as being completely amateur and doing it wrong and not getting it right and just being very low budget and just really poor quality and crummy and just not so great. Or you think of like the NPRs out there with their Serial or the Discovery Channel with the How Stuff Works and stuff you missed in history class and like all that kind of stuff, the really high quality, high level things. But a show like ours, we're in the middle, and there's this term that people are starting to use, which is a little confusing, I think, for gamers, because in gaming, it means something different. But it's a hobbyist podcaster, because you get like the NPRs and they're professionals, right? And you get Joe Schmo down the block saying, come listen to my podcast about Dust, because I think Dust is awesome. you know, people would listen to it, right? And they're the amateurs, right? But we're in the middle we're the hobbyists. So we're doing stuff like professionals, but it's not paying our bills. And someday I think it'd be awesome if the show paid our bills. If like I was able to do it as a job, and if I was able to pay you guys, because I would love to be able to do such a thing and then like do it full time. And we really like branch out and cover all sorts of stuff. But even if that never happens, I think just the fact that we are branching out. So like the Roku stuff, even if that doesn't happen, we get the videos that are going on the YouTube, we're doing more events and we're doing more reviews and things. I mean, a year ago, 2 years ago, we wouldn't be having Chris and Root stuff here to be talking about and reviewing. And I want to be able to like staff it out, as it were, which makes me sound arrogant, but I'd like to be able to say, we got this Chris and Root stuff. Who wants to do it? Adrian, do you want to review and then send it to you? So I don't even have to look at it. I don't have to do anything with it. You do it. You do your whole thing. You do the video content create and all that. And then we come together on a podcast episode and we go at it. Yeah. And so I see me doing more of a behind the scenes kind of stuff and doing that. And like, that'll be part of my gaming. And it makes me happy. But again, it's not sitting at a table and rolling some D6 and be like, hey, although I think there'll be some of that too, but just a different role as we move forward. And maybe even meaning me being on air less and the rest of you being on air more, which you guys may or may not want. I don't know. It's many different things, but just one potential path. And I should say, as we're recording this, two things, because we're kind of moving into mailbag and announcements and all that sort of stuff. So I'm going to swap it up and we'll go into announcements, I guess, before mailbag. Sitting stage left to my right, I got a box of unknown items that I think is very valuable from Dwarven Forge for us to review. And I'm excited to dive in and to look at. And once upon a time, this would not have happened. And it might seem like Dwarven Forge, like, why are you excited about it? Why does that matter? Because I mean, we do wargaming, right? And that's primarily like for D&D and that kind of stuff. But they have things that could be good for a wargamer. And I think that'll be an interesting aspect for it. And then the other interesting thing, and people who are listening to the podcast episode will have picked up on this potentially already, whereas people watching the video won't. And as we're recording it, I got to be a little mysterious. So there's a chance, a really good one, that this week that we're recording this, Adrian, we're recording it at the middle end of October. If things get done right with the timing, we will have another sponsor for the show. And I've kind of alluded to it, but like we're literally this close, like my fingers are almost touching, where they just need to sign the contract and send the money. And they're going to do it. But if the timing's right, they will be sponsors for this episode as well as like a bonus on top of when they will officially start. And until they sign it, that's why I'm not saying the name. But people listening to the podcast, if this has happened, you'll be like, oh, wait, that's why I heard that thing in the beginning, unless you skip the first whatever amount of time, as some people do. So there'll be a new sponsor. And that'll be the first time ever for the show that we will have two simultaneous sponsors, which I think is pretty neat because it provides a little more security for the show. So it's sorry to be like a vague Facebook post. I'm doing okay, guys, but I can't talk about it. Like that annoys the crap out of me. But I got to be vague Facebook post. We got this thing that's going on, but I can't tell you who they are or when it's going to happen. And it may or may not have already happened by the time you listen to this. But it's just like, I don't like to say things until they're done. But this is, it's done. It's just, it may not be done for this episode with the timing. Do you have any, I mean, I have other stuff to mention, but do you have any other announcements or thoughts about stuff that you want to share as we're being a little nostalgic?
No.
You're not a very nostalgic kind of guy, are you?
No, actually, that's not true. I'm actually very nostalgic. I don't have anything of particular interest to share with you or the audience at this point in time, though.
Nothing about, I mean, you've talked about when you came on board and that kind of stuff before, but nothing about that or your expectations and how things, what they were then and how what they might be now, if there are any difference or your likes or dislikes or any of that kind of stuff.
Oh, you mean like the first time you did the show? I thought it would suck. And I'll let you figure out if my opinions changed or not.
You will, which is one of the things I like about you. You do not beat around the bush. You will just come right over and say, that was awful. Don't do that. Like you did. Bring it back to the show like you did with the closing credits. Remember, it was like four episodes ago. In was it the Sam Mustafa episode where
yeah, I did the whole, have been. Yeah,
you got it. You need, and then you just gave me a look, and I'm looking at the screen as I'm doing it. I'm like, what does this mean? And so episode ended. And what did you say? I don't even remember the wording you gave.
I don't remember exactly, but the whole inflection and like the sort of forced seeming enthusiasm, you keep on getting, whatever, man.
You mean the cheese factor?
Very high cheese factor. Yeah.
I do camp it up. Like it is truly how I feel, but I do camp it up a little bit. But when you had said after that recording, I was like, okay, we're going to do something different. We're going to try. And then I remember you listened to the different, because I was like, so what do you think about it? And your response to that was pretty funny.
Oh, my God. I don't actually remember. It was definitely different, but you should probably keep the high cheese factor version, I guess.
I think that's what you said. I think your words were something along the lines of, that was just wrong. You got to go back and do it the other way.
Yeah.
Which was pretty funny. Why don't we move slightly into mailbag? And I'm not going to say it's my favorite segment of the show because I say it every show and then you make fun of me for that. So although it is my favorite segment of the show,
I don't think I make fun of you for that. I make fun of you for a lot of stuff. I don't think I make fun of you for that.
You do. And our listeners that pick up on it. So I'll get messages from people, speaking of feedback, and they'll be like, the guy's really let into you, right? But you're a good egg about it. And I'm like, yeah, they do. They like to pick on me, but that's okay. Because that's partly why I'm here. I'm here so everyone else can shine. And so if that means just poking fun at me, you poke fun at me, whatever.
They actually think we're too hard on you? They should see
I think they do.
They ought to some see of them, some, anyway. They ought to see some of the behind the scenes shit.
No, they shouldn't. That will never see the light of day. So speaking of mailbag, over on YouTube, which we've alluded to a few times, listener Patrick said of episode 194, quote, I attended Council of Five Nations once in 1990, the same year I first attended TotalCon, now that I think about it. For the past several years, I've been meaning to get back there. Hopefully 2018 will be the year. Great show, guys, as always, unquote. So Patrick, thank you very much for taking the time to not only leave a comment, but to leave a comment and feedback on our YouTube channel, which people will go and check out because we record these live and that's where we do the unboxing videos and all that kind of stuff. So you go to wargamingrecon.com/YouTube and you'll get that there. And I've never been to Council. Aiden, you ever been?
No, I haven't.
Mike Payne goes every year. He loves it. We did a whole episode on it. And, well, we did an episode in which it was mentioned. Because I've heard from listeners, and I get some flack from some members of the show for listening to feedback, but I've heard from some listeners that these local gaming event episodes aren't as popular because a lot of you don't live where you could go to these, which is understandable. You're in another country or somewhere else, and you're not going to travel to Council or to Total Con or whatever, that you like when we do a broader topic, yeah. Which I completely understand and something I like to do. I also know that there's a segment of listeners who do love these, so it's an interesting balancing act, but we will be looking at how we handle local gaming coverage and trying new methods, which we've also already been kind of trying a little bit about splitting an episode up so that part of it, like we did with Council, part of it we talk about Council and part of it we talk about other stuff, so that it's not like the whole thing on it, so that there will be something for everyone, hopefully.
Yeah.
As a way to try to modify and see how that goes, and we'll see what works out. We do have the Facebook group, the fan Facebook group, so that's something people can check out. Another way you can get in touch and leave feedback. We do love the feedback. And there's actually been some talk lately on podcasting groups about the value of feedback, in which people say, part of like what Patrick said, quote, great show, guys, as always. Is that something that you then share with your listeners? Is that something you share with the audience? And I'm very much a yeah, because people took the time to leave the feedback. And I think if one of you says such a thing, then maybe others of you are feeling that way, but just don't actually write in. And so that you might want to hear it. I don't know what you think about that, Adrian, if you just think it's time better spent elsewhere. But
no, I don't see anything wrong with doing that. I mean, we share most of the feedback we get, actually, don't we?
Not all of it, because some of it's repetitious. It'll be the same stuff, and I don't want to.
Well, yeah, share, like, I mean, you don't have
things in a row. That's all, whatever. Or yeah, some of it doesn't have redeeming qualities.
Yeah.
Not all feedback we get is positive, and not all feedback we share is positive. But for me, it has to be constructive. If it's just like, I hate you guys and I wish the show would explode and I hope terrible things happen to you, why would we share that? That doesn't help anyone.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't care about, well, I shouldn't say I don't care about negative feedback, but I don't mind negative feedback. But yeah, if it's just like, you guys suck and you need to not do this, thanks for your opinion. I don't care.
No, exactly. But we've had some comments on some of the YouTube unboxings,
but like,
where people like, you spent 4 minutes talking about the box. Like, don't spend 4 minutes talking, and they're right. And so I've been like,
yeah,
pointing that out. And then I mentioned that, and I mentioned it and all the stuff, and then I fix it. And so if you don't tell us, we can't fix it.
Yeah. And it's like the convention coverage. I mean, it surprised me to find out that people didn't actually like that, because I would have thought that that would have been some of the more popular episodes. So it was a bit of a surprise to find out that it's not. But since it's not, we can do something about it. That's fine too.
Yeah, and it's good that we know. And I mean, leading up to it, I thought, like, when we started doing a lot of convention coverage, I thought, you know, shows like real media entities, that's what they do. They cover events, and we're going to be like we're going to be real boys. And so when Geppetto carves us and makes us into a real boy with the Disney fairy person, we'll show people by doing a lot of convention coverage, and people seem to like it. And so we did more and more, and we went big with the local gaming coverage, and we went too big. And so we can adjust. And that's a great thing. Like, if you're listening to radio, you're watching a movie or a TV show, you can't influence what's happening there, but you can influence that on a podcast. Because you get that community, and you get that kindred spirits, and you feel like you know one another. And at least here, anyway, I think all of us, we try to be very responsive to the whole community, whether you listen to the show or you don't. And it gives us a chance to be more responsive and adapt to fit the changing needs of the wargaming communities. So it's pretty important.
Yeah.
And I think at this point, just also want to take a moment to thank our Wargaming Recon Army members. They are the people who back us on Patreon. Patrick, Kyle from Vermont, I want to say that you too could become a member for as little as $1 per month. You can do that by going to wargamingrecon.com/Patreon. Everything will be on our show notes, wargamingrecon.com/WR195. That's wargamingrecon.com/WR195. And we're going to be back next time with episode 196. And I don't even remember what we're talking about. But it'll be something good, I'm sure.
No doubt.
Do you have anything else you want to add, Adrian, before we close out the show?
No, I don't. It's been an hour and a half. I'm done.
Okay. Well, thank you, Adrian, for taking the time to be on the episode of the show. I appreciate you as a co-host and all that you bring to the show. And I think listeners do as well. And then I just want to thank everyone who's taken the time to listen to the show. I know you guys have very busy lives. You probably listen while you're commuting or you're at the gym. Not at the gym. Well, you're painting figures or assembling stuff. And it means a lot to us. It also means a lot when you write in and you tell us what you're thinking and give us that feedback. So remember that no matter how busy you are, no matter how much time you're spending looking back at your own personal gaming origins, that you know you have to, you gotta, you need to keep on gaming. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon on your mobile device. Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the TSR Podcast Network. Visit wargamingrecon.com/TSRPN for more information and to learn about the other good shows on the network. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Wargaming Recon is dedicated to the memory of longtime listener Andrew. I ask all listeners to join me in a moment of silence in memory of Andrew. Wargaming Recon is made possible by listeners like you. Become a Patreon backer to get behind-the-scenes content and new episodes before everyone else, starting at $1 per month. Visit wargamingrecon.com/Patreon to become a Patreon backer. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by Enfilade. Enfilade is a flagship historical wargaming convention for the Northwest Historical Miniature Gaming Society. Enfilade is held annually over Memorial Day weekend at the Red Lion Inn in Olympia, Washington. Enjoy the largest historical miniature gaming convention west of the Mississippi at Enfilade. Visit www.nhmgscitadel.com for more information. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 18th through the 20th, 2018, at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information.